You're listening to Sibling Talk, commentary from a progressive point of view. Now here are your hosts, John Paulette and Mary Jo Tumere.
Hello, I'm John Paulette.
And I'm Mary Jo Tumere.
Mary, tin soldiers and Nixon's coming. We're finally on our own. Doesn't it feel like 1970 with what's going on in the college campuses?
It could. It does. Or at least I think there are some people who are nostalgic for those days. And maybe that's being harsh, thinking it is not 1970. The issue is very different. The students are different. And you know who else is different? The cops.
Yeah.
And so,
how so? Talk about
that. I just happened to turn on TV last night as the cops were going into Columbia. I think what the cops have learned over these years is how to de-escalate and be professional. And so it wasn't the crazy experience or, you know, like the cops coming in and beating up the kids. And stuff. That didn't appear to be happening. You know, they went into the building. They took the kids out. It was a little bit of a nothing. That's the way it seemed to me.
I'm very interested by it. I teach at a university here in Chicago. There is an encampment there, like on what would be kind of the commons, the open area in the middle. I do not know how big it is. I didn't see it. We have two campuses, one in the Lincoln Park area and one downtown. And this term, I'm teaching downtown, so I don't really see what's going on there. I do get a lot of emails from the administration. I do have to comment. You talked before about how things are different and students are different. Last night and this morning, I got a series of like four emails from students saying that they were going to be part of the protest today and asking that they be excused from class. I got to tell you the truth. In 1970, I don't think we were like that, saying, can I be excused from class so I could go protest?
Exactly.
Doesn't that feel different?
It does, and the consequences to them. So one of the things I think is that for the students in the late 60s, early 70s, it was the Vietnam War. There was a draft. And so the threat of the war was much more existential than the Palestinian issue is to these kids. So that to me is one thing. And you lived it. I did not. Second, these kids, like at Columbia, it's $80,000 a year. So whether you have scholarships or your parents are paying for whatever, you have to be thinking, what is the return on investment of me protesting, you know, a month before, 2 weeks before I'm ready to graduate and losing the, you know, $300,000 I've just invested in this place. You know what I mean? So I just think the dynamics for students are so different. That's not to say that these kids don't feel strongly about the issue. I'm not undercutting that at all. But it is a little, it's just like a practical thing. Although they should look at their parents, which would really in some of their cases be their grandparents, and say, well, all that protesting didn't hurt their careers. They went on to be investment bankers and make all kinds of money. You know what I mean? So that's just a different way to look at it. But I do think the situation is different. And that's why I'm not sure that it's a great analogy back to. Now, on the other hand, there probably are students who romanticize that time. And they're kind of like, yeah, we're like good rads and we're out protesting just like, you know, the hippies did in the 60s, and it seems attractive to them. And it made me think about I was in college. I graduated in 1979, so this is just 10 years later. But all the radicalism, the protests, it was all gone by then. So our issue was to divest from South Africa, which, you know, this is like the divestment issue. But you couldn't get a good protest going. You know what I mean? No. Again, it wasn't existential, and it was for a couple people, and, you know, they wanted it to be a radical issue. But most people were like, yeah, that's fine, but I got my law school app to worry about.
Well, and I think back, I was in college right through it. I graduated in 1972. For those looking for, like, orientation to dates, the Kent State shootings were May of 1970.
May 4th. I mean, we're May just 4th. Coming on that date.
Yep, we are. The moratorium and the mobilization marches were my freshman year. The summer before my freshman year was the were the riots at the Democratic Convention. So I say all that just I was right in the middle of it, and I think I can kind of speak as a an eyewitness to that. There was certainly, and I think I had a lot of this, but among many of us, a really deep revulsion, not just opposition, but revulsion to what was happening in Vietnam. That was compounded by a number of things. In fall of my freshman year, Richard Nixon won the presidency. We hated Richard Nixon, or I did, and did not believe that he was going to get us out of the war. And in fact, it proved that that wasn't true. He didn't plan to do that at all. So there were all these elements there, but there was, I think, one big thing driving all of it, and that was the draft. Mm-hmm. Because Vietnam War was not just a theoretical thing to us. And for me personally, those who know the period know, coming up to 1968, the local draft board really kind of sorted through and chose who they wanted to draft. And it was kind of obscure how they did that.
You mean if you were black, you were more likely to be?
You were more likely to be drafted. You know, it was strange that this was before the Vietnam War, but Elvis Presley got drafted, probably didn't need to be. So they wanted to make this all much more fair. And they also wanted us as young men to be able to make plans and know whether or not we were likely to be drafted. So they came up with the lottery. And the lottery was held in the fall. It was a big, dramatic thing. I remember we listened on the radio, and out of a big drum, they drew birthdays. And that was the order that they would call people for the draft. So if you were the first one called, you're going. The reality we would find out over the next couple of years, most likely, if you were the first 100 numbers, you're pretty certainly going to be drafted. If you were number 300, you were not going to be drafted at all. And if inquiring minds want to know, I was number 22.
So, you?
Yeah, no kidding. Actually, I lived in a small dormitory at Georgetown, and everybody in the dorm put in $5, which would go to whoever got called first. That's the only thing I've ever won in my life. There, it was really bad. And we had a brother who was in ROTC at that time. He actually had a scholarship for it. His number was like 310. Oh. So even though he wanted to do it, he wasn't going to get drafted. I'm making too long a point of that. But that, I think, created an urgency and an emotion. I don't want to dismiss our real belief that we were in the wrong war for all the wrong reasons. But I think this is partly what you were saying before. I don't think for most students today, and I'm going to make an exception on that, perhaps for many of the Muslim students or students who have some connection to Palestine, maybe there's a greater urgency than I know all the time.
Well, Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. I think some people have sincerely held, I think a lot of young people actually have sincerely held beliefs about what's happening in Gaza and our complicity. And I don't disagree with them, honestly. But the world is so different. I mean, we have these kids out there protesting, and you notice a lot of them wearing face coverings. Why?
Yes.
It's not because of COVID, but they understand how easy it is to figure out who they are if their face isn't covered. And even if they're not worried about being arrested, they are worried about the backlash on social media, the doxing and everything else. So they understand a universe we don't understand, and it is not 1970. Yeah, so there are many more risks to their protests in some ways. And then just the complexity of the issue. I think morally, the Vietnam protests were pretty simple for young people. But here you have the complexity of the anti-Zionism as opposed to anti-Semitism, you know, the calling out Netanyahu. It's just extremely complex. And when you try to bring it down to just a nub, then the issue gets lost. And then you're blaming these kids. Oh, you hate Jews because you stand up against Israel. It doesn't make any sense. And then, John, on top of it, you have these universities who I think are many of them reacting so badly. First of all, the best thing to do with kids oftentimes is ignore them. You know, okay, have your protest. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, I don't know, and maybe we talked about this the other day, or just you and I talked about it, how much pressure they're getting from their boards, from their donors. Like, you got to stop these kids. You can't have these kids out there peacefully protesting. We don't mind if a bunch of lunatics go in and, you know, destroy the Capitol and put shit all over the walls, but we're not going to have these kids. And this is really an aside, but I don't know whether this is true. So, you know, just based on nothing. But the right has often seen what happened in the 70s and then throughout the 70s as the beginning of their great movement. You know, Nixon, there's a through line from Nixon to Reagan, right? Mm-hmm. You have this little interregnum where you have Jimmy Carter. And then it was like, we got enough of those liberals. And a lot of the organizations that we're living with today started in the mid to late 70s, right? That was, whether it's the Leo Leonard and his group of conservative lawyers, or the religious, the moral majority, all of those were reactions to the 60s and to the late 60s and the mid 70s. And I think that there are conservatives today, Mike Johnson, these, you know, thinkers, for what, you know, I use that word loosely, that like, all right, bam, we're coming back. It's the Reformation. Or it's the, you know, what's that term they use in the British, you know, we're going to reinstate the king, you know.
Right.
We're going to
restoration.
The restoration of our movement. This huge majority of people that don't want chaos. And what we see with this very, very small percentage of kids protesting is chaos. And this is good for us. This is awesome for us. Again, I don't know if there's any truth to that, but it feels that way when I hear them talking about it. And, you know, then you have Sam Alito and those hacks on the Supreme Court going, see, we told you.
Yeah,
we are going to be the ones that stop the chaos right here.
Right. And I want to back up that I think you are right. I think it is true. And I'll tell you what, I was talking to a friend who had to be home yesterday, some medical thing, not big, but ended up with a lot of TV time. And she decided, for those kind of reasons that infect occasionally some of us, she said, I'm going to check out what Fox News is saying. Now, remember, yesterday, there is a ton of Trump trial things going on. He's fined for the gag order. They're really crucial witnesses. All that's happening. But she told me she ended up watching for several hours.
Oh, my God, poor thing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Mental illness, right?
Yeah, what? You don't have a remote control. But she said during that time, she said, I never heard anything about the Trump trial. All I heard about was the chaos that's going on the campuses. Because I really think, Fox has an uncanny ability to catch what the narrative is and to form that narrative. And I think part of that narrative is the same thing what we identified in the late 60s as the hard hats, that, the silent majority,
right,
who didn't believe in long hair, drugs. They kind of believed in sex. That was okay. But protesting, all of that. That's just to your point. I think this really becomes part of their narrative. And you know where I think we see it? Who rushed up to go to Columbia?
Yeah,
Mike Johnson. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm just concerned about that. And unfortunately, the police aren't going to play along. And you said you don't think in Chicago they'll play along. You know, so that's, at least they didn't in New York last night. Of course, it's New York. Mm-hmm. But Biden must get ahead of the issue, because otherwise we will see another Trump presidency. And we're going a little longer than we usually do, but it's such an important issue. Yesterday, Time Magazine has this, what will Trump's second term be like? And he's like talking about all this law and order to put immigrants in camps, and we're going to close down those blue cities. So if that's your thing, you're not like, oh my God, that's terrifying, we don't want Trump in power again. You're like, yeah. And John, think back to when Nixon was elected, a deeply corrupt man who was saying, it's all about law and order and I will restore order. And he becomes the president that many conservatives today look back on and say, Nixon was treated badly and Nixon was treated unfairly. So these are crazy days.
They are. And my one piece of advice to every administrator, every police officer, do not send armed police or soldiers into a college campus. Don't do it. At Kent State, the site of that was called Blanket Hill. And you remember that.
Exactly. And it's, a year or how many years ago today? I mean, May 4th coming up. And stand down. That's what.
Stand down.
Yeah.
Stand by and stand down.
Yes. All right.
Yeah. Talk to you. Bye.
Sibling Talk is a JMP production. Theme song by David Paulette.